We'll do it live!
You are listening to the AMC Report with your host, Ryan Dawson.
Back to this story. At the end of the day, I just laugh at them and I think to myself, oh, okay. So you're in a cage with Dan Henderson and you're trying to convince me that you're going to get your death move off before he knocks your chin into the third row of the arena. I mean, it's just nonsense. And at the end of the day, like anything else propagated, they're only fooling themselves. They're not fooling anyone else. And it's actually dangerous to be teaching these people, oh, now you don't have to use brains. You don't have to use common sense. If you want to walk down that dark alleyway in a mini skirt at 3 a.m. in Venice Beach,
don't worry, because you can stab them with your keys.
Yeah, exactly. You can stab them with your keys. And if they attack you with your gun, you can disarm them with your death moves.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's the disservice. You know, I taught women's self-defense when I was in college for 3 years. And sometimes, first of all, the first thing is they come and they go, oh, I already have some back then, and it'll date me. I always used to get them coming in saying, oh, I already have defense under my belt. Yeah, I took Tai Bo. You took aerobics, and now you're going to kick the 240-pound guy who's amped up on crystal meth and drunk.
I had the same story as you, and I'm like, look, you don't know how to kickbox. You took aerobics with a boxing theme. I know exactly what you did. You threw punches in the mirror. I mean,
at the
not
air.
Even correctly, yeah.
Yeah, and my favorite was saying, before we get to an actual attacker, let's kick the heavy bag. And they kick the heavy bag, and the first thing that happens is they hurt their foot.
Right.
And then I go, see what happens? And then the next thing was, I would, at first.
The person's worse. They're much bonier. And if they check your kick or whatever, it would hurt a lot more than the bag.
Oh, absolutely. And then the first thing you teach them is, listen, prevention is 95% of the battle. Use your brains. Forget the gang, the cult that is feminism.
Learn distance and all that.
Yep. Well, no, what you learn is, listen, the other great disservice to women of all time is feminism. Feminism, right? Because it teaches them, oh, well, you should be able to do this and you should be able to do that and you should and you should. Great. On Planet Unicorn in a perfect universe, you're right. You should be able to wear a mini skirt with your boobs hanging out and walk down the alleyway at 3 a.m. in Venice, California. Absolutely. You should be able to do that. Can you? No. So let's deal with reality. So prevention is 90% of the battle. You don't go out by yourself, you know, go out with other girlfriends, and you have to make sure one of them's sober. I can't tell you how many times you see a pack of four girls go out. They should get shit-faced together. None of them know where the other one is. And then they end up in the situations they end up in.
And also people go, are you blaming what she's wearing? Like, no.
Nope.
You're blaming the person that attacked them.
No,
but,
absolutely.
You know, if I went swimming with a bunch of meat on me and I got bit by a shark, I wouldn't be shocked. You know, it's like, yeah, you ought to be able to wear whatever you want. And it's never your fault, no matter what you're wearing. It's the fault of the person that attacked you. But if you don't want to be attacked, here's your highest probability of not having that happen. You don't get drunk and do this and this and this and this. I mean, just because you want something to be true doesn't mean it is. This criminal doesn't care, you know?
No.
And this other thing from feminism is like, rape's about power and blah, blah. No, it's not. People rape and molest people because of sexuality. I mean, that's a fact.
Oh, listen, you want to talk about rape statistics. Nobody ever, because they always hide them, the rape statistics of men in prison. I mean, if you included them in rape statistics, 1,000%, because, you know, there's 6 million people incarcerated in this country, and all those men get raped on a daily basis, those statistics would shadow the female rape statistics. But, you know, I don't like to feed into the whole men versus women thing. So the point I was going to make is, listen, I'll use myself as an example. Even with all my combat training and my martial arts training, should I, in a perfect world, be able to go to inner city Harlem or Watts and walk around and with no shirt on and board shorts and flip flops, with my back pocket wallet protruding out, showing how fat it is at 3 a.m? Yeah, I guess maybe. But do you think if I did that, number one, all my training in the world isn't going to help me. And number two, I'm going to be victimized. My wallet's going to be stolen. I'm going to be shot, stabbed, or at minimum mugged. Whose fault is that? That's my fault. Because you don't do that. Just like you don't go, you know, you don't go into the jungle without a pistol and then get attacked by a lion and then try to say, well, I should have been able to go there and not get attacked. There's facts of life. You need to deal with the facts of life. You need to
be the attacker's fault, but it's extreme stupidity on your end, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. It's the attacker's fault, but the idea that somehow I should have been able to do that, so I committed to doing that, and now all of a sudden I'm the victim. You see what I'm saying? It's a very juvenile, childish, ideological, which all ideology is extremism, right? That I'm going to put myself in harm's way because it should be this way. It's nonsense. So taking women out of the equation, even as a trained male, there's certain places that I will not go because it's inevitable that I am going to be victimized. And if you know, and that's my point.
I've been victimized by the police more than anyone else.
Oh, absolutely. When you leave your house in the morning, you get in your car, you start your car, you get to the street, and you put your blinker on, you go left or right, whichever direction you're going in. The thought of being carjacked or mugged or raped or murdered by anybody other than the police never crosses your mind. It's not a
threat. When you see a cop car, you're like, oh shit, is my seatbelt on? Is my mirror right? Is this right?
I'll take it one step further. How many times have you been, you know, you're driving, and all of a sudden you look up, and in your rearview mirror is a cop, and immediately you go numb and your adrenaline kicks in. Now, I'm not exaggerating. You literally go numb and your heart starts pounding.
It's like seeing a shark.
Exactly. And the first thing you do is, you run through the Rolodex of your mind and go, oh, okay, our seatbelt's on. You look down, you're driving the right speed limit. You're using your blinker. You turn the volume of your music down. You look left, and actually it distracts you from your driving to the point where they end up pulling you over because you make a mistake because you're so nervous you start weaving or something, checking your radio. And at the end of the day, when they pull you over, they've got a pistol with a hollow point bullet, and they pull it out and they aim it at your head. And the only thing between the end of your life and living is the discretion of this roided out moron who has less than a high school education generally, because most of them just get their GED to
their good enough education.
The entrance requirements.
Good enough diploma.
Executioner. And that was a story I was going to tell you earlier that I might as well tell now. The one and only time I've ever pulled over on a motorcycle for police was because I was with a guy that I was doing business with, and I didn't want him to think I was a hoodlum. So we went out with two other guys, motorcycle riding, and we go out on the PCH, and this cop pulls me over, and they kept driving. And the only reason I pulled over is because I didn't want to take off and think let this guy that I potentially want to do business with think I'm a hoodlum, which I wouldn't have been, right? Because all I would have been doing is the natural, which is protecting my life from a criminal who can murder me with impunity. So he pulls me over, and I don't have registration. And I explained to him, well, he didn't have probable cause to pull me over in the first place. So after the fact, you can't get me for this. It's just an infraction. I don't have my license plate with registration on my bike. So he tells me, well, I'm going to confiscate the bike because this can't be on the street. And I explained to him why he can't do that. All the legal reasons why he can't. He can give me a ticket and be on his way. And in good faith, I will go show up to court and I will make this right. And he says, well, I'm going to because you're on my street, he says. And I say, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to push my bike off to the berm onto this private property, and I'm going to call AAA, and they're going to come. And he says, well, I'll make a deal with you. If your guy gets here before my guy, you can go. Whatever. So I call AAA. I'm on hold with AAA, and the second motorcycle cop shows up. And if you want to know, if you think it's, I don't know what the psychology is behind it, I can only postulate, but if you think the guys that drive cop cars are bad, nothing's worse than the motorcycle cops. For whatever reason, they're really got something. They got a hard on for people. So the second guy shows up, and then the tow truck shows up. And I say to the original guy, listen, you made a deal with me. My guy's coming. My bike's on private property. You have no right to steal my bike. And I'm talking cordially because I know you don't raise your voice. You don't make large arms.
Don't startle them.
Don't startle them.
You're basically talking to ape people.
Yeah, that's my favorite, right? When you hear the guy, the Derek Wilkins guy, the brave men and women in blue. First of all, they're in black. Second of all, the brave men and women, don't startle them. What did he say? He was afraid. He was in fear of his life because he got punched in the face by a 16-year-old. So I'm talking rational. I'm not making large arm movements. You know, I'm talking. All of a sudden, the other guy, who literally had to have been 5'1", rips out his taser and puts it to my head 3 feet away and says, "On the ground now, on the ground, get on the ground, rah, rah, rah." He actually startled the other guy. And the other guy is caught off guard. He's going, "Holy shit." And you can see how nervous he was. He's like, "Holy shit." And he kind of grabs my wrist and he puts his hand on my shoulder. He's trying to put me in like an arm bar and put me down on the ground. And he's pushing. But you know, when you train, you know, when you're being pushed down by your shoulder, automatically you know how to posture and where to put your post so they can't do it. But I'm like, okay, I better stop. So I sit down on the curb and the guy's standing over me. And then now the other cop, the initiating cop, the guy who's 5'1", sees that the guy's got me, and he has his stun gun in that, and you know the two arm position for a pistol where both hands are on the pistol. That's how he has his stun gun, right? And you're like, wait a minute. The reason you have that for a pistol is because of recoil and for accuracy. You don't need that for a stun gun, but that's beside the point. So I get down on the ground and he holsters it because he sees the other cop has me with my arm behind my back. And every archetypal, stereotypical, abusive thing you've ever heard in your life comes out of his mouth. He pounds his chest with his finger going, "I'm in charge. You hear that?" And he points at my face. "You listen to me. You do what you're told. You sit down and you shut up. We're going to take your bite and there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. That bike's going with me." You know, and the whole thing came out of his mouth. And I'm sitting there literally biting my cheek because I'm trying not to laugh, right? And it's the mental illness is on display for the whole world to see. This is who becomes a cop. A little peepee, mentally ill, inferiority complex asshole that has nothing better to do but to exercise his imagined dominance onto other people.
And there's nothing they like better than finding a guy who's bigger than them, who naturally would pound them into the ground and using their authority to try and arrest them and harass them and bully them. Because they could never, ever do that without the badge and the whole fraternity of government behind them.
Yeah, the costume. And more than that, it was that I was using reason and logic and calmly and coolly explaining to them what the law is and what their authority – I don't believe that they have any authority, but what little authority that has actually been granted to them through the legal channels that they have, and that what they're doing was criminal and that he didn't have the authority to do that. And he didn't like that somebody was intellectually, intelligibly through verbiage explaining that to him. So
anybody was telling him he couldn't do something.
Yeah. And like any other ape or
respect thug, my authority.
Yeah. My authority, any other ape or thug or criminal, he resorted to what? He's using big words.
Pull out a weapon.
Get on the ground. And that's where if I had continued to exercise my right to defend myself, I would have been tasered, or they would have pulled out the gun and executed me on the spot, and then they would have gotten away with it because I was resisting arrest. Now wait a minute.
Initial reason to arrest you to begin with.
Exactly. At best, I committed a traffic infraction, and now you're telling me I wasn't under arrest because what I did wasn't arrestable. And now I deserve to be executed for the sole reason of resisting arrest for a traffic infraction. It's FUBAR. It's out of control. And there's no answer other than there are some battles that are being won on a local level where they found out that if you put the liability on the police so that the actual officers have to purchase, like any other business, have to purchase liability insurance, that eventually the insurance company will drop them so they can no longer be a police officer. And the other thing that's working locally that people need to understand is, unfortunately, when a cop does that, right, you, because of the fraternity and the union of the police department, you can't sue the individual officer. Although actually you can, but you won't win. It'll come down on the department. And what is the department? The department's paid for by tax money. So who gets sued? The officer doesn't get sued. The captain doesn't get sued. The department doesn't get sued. The people get sued, right? It comes out of the tax money.
That's why Will Griggs advocating that the money come out of the officer's own pension fund.
Absolutely, which it should. which is another farce that I want to bring up, which is the joke is on them, and I will in a little bit. But with this said, you can even take it one step forward. People need to know, sue them, sue the crap out of them. Yes, you're not suing him. You're not suing the captain. You're not suing the department. You're not suing internal affairs. But if you can, especially on a local level in these small towns, eventually they'll get hit with so many lawsuits that the insurance will drop them, or the town will run out of a budget to pay the police officers. Therefore, the police department shut down. And we actually have seen this in about 8 or 9 cases now, where there's these municipalities who literally don't have a police department because,
and yet it's not all anarchy and chaos.
Of course, it never is. That, you know, this idea of anarchy and chaos, you know, people behave themselves because, first of all, they're good people and they don't want to do wrong. And second of all, they know nothing good's going to come of it, right? People will defend themselves. And the point I wanted to make that just popped in my head is the thing that I laugh at most, the ultimate irony in this whole farce that is the police force, is these guys aren't there. And this is, and by the way, the parasite class who's relying on these idiots need to understand, these people aren't there because they're noble and they're there because they're fighting some just cause. They're there for a paycheck. They're mercenaries. This is exactly what they are. And what the biggest thing that they do what they do for is, yes, they're getting paid at that $55,000 or $65,000 or some places much, much greater than that, that weekly check to pay their bills. But it's the paid forward idea of, it's the pension. I'm here because my mother told me, listen, you're an idiot. You have no aptitude or talent that will translate into the real world. So you better get a state job. You better take the, I forget what that test is that they all take to get a state job, and get there, because you're going to work and eventually you'll be taken care of, because you're going to get this big exorbitant pension that's going to take care of you and your kids for the rest of your life. The joke's on them, because the same parasite class that's using them as their enforcement wing and abusing them laughs at them, refers to them as their lapdogs. They're just animals to them. To them, we're the cattle, but to them, they're the dogs. And that pension fund, just like Social Security, just like 401k and everything else, has already been looted. It's not there. Now it's being propped up with all the other usual mechanisms they use to temporarily prop it up. But by the time the officers working today get to the point where they're going to collect their pension, they've got a big surprise waiting. It's been looted by the very people that you were a mercenary for. It's no longer there. And I almost have an erection waiting for the day when they realize that they've been duped.
They finally got robbed back.
Yeah. You have no pension fund. And yeah. And actually, that day will never come, because, listen, the society's gotten to the point where it's at an end. And it's almost game over when the dollar collapses, which is inevitable, and the whole system comes crashing down. What the parasite class is going to do, and they've already pigeonholed them into this position where they're going to be the first line of defense, which is the domestic police. And when you study history, and I'm talking ancient history, when you study even the Roman Empire, the first thing they do when the system collapses is they use the domestic police force to quench the rebellion. Except because they also used that same police force while the system was viable to loot. You know, the last official act of any government is to loot the people. They use that police force to oppress them and help them loot the people with the last bit of money they did have. Those people have been harboring resentment specifically targeted at the local police force. So when the hammer comes down, history has shown us the first thing that happens is the local police force gets completely decimated. They get steamrolled with minimal.
The first ones that get wiped out.
The first ones that get wiped out. Absolutely. Now, these clowns, these morons don't understand that. They don't have a high school education. They can't think past the primal, ooh, big words. So they don't understand what's coming, but it's coming. Now, of course, after that, then the parasite class, even if they haven't are completely skipped dodge, which most of them do, then the ones that are left over aren't the ones at the top. It's their little minions, the ones in government, the ones, the politicians who think that they're going to somehow resurrect the situation. They unleash the military, which is why, you know, things like Oath Keepers it does do good in that they do what they do, inform and wake up the military to say, listen, you joined because at some level, some of you, not all of you, have integrity and believe that you were doing the right thing and were at least brave enough to say, hey, I'm not going to sit in a squad car rolling around pulling over 9-to-5ers, women and, you know, women and men. And
teenagers outside a football game or something. Yeah.
That you're going to jump out of an airplane with a gun strapped to your chest in a foreign country where you don't look like the indigenous people, and you are going to try to oppress them, and they are going to shoot back. And they do a great job of reaching out to them to say, listen, if you are integral and you are honorable and you do believe in the Constitution and you did give your oath to uphold that Constitution against all enemies, foreign, and here's the key point, foreign and domestic, then you will, when you get those orders, realize that the people giving those orders have jumped the shark, have jumped the ship, and those people are no longer giving valid orders, and it is your duty to disobey them. Those are the people in the key positions that are shutting their mouth right now, who, when they're told to turn those keys for the nukes, or when they're told to turn their guns and missiles on the American people, will stand down and prevent the other idiots from doing it.
That's why the government's hiring so many foreign mercenary forces from El Salvador or wherever else, because maybe they'll shoot Americans. You know, they're worried about our own armed forces. And we saw open rebellion. Well, this is another large topic. Hegel just resigned or got fired, what have you. He got fired basically for questioning it. But there are people disobeying orders, even in Israel, which is the largest police state in the world, total racial colonization, genocide. They've had Israeli pilots just refuse to fly over Gaza, even though there is no anti-air and they have zero risk of getting shot down. They didn't do it because I'm not bombing kids. You know, I'm not going to do it. And they went to jail, but they still refused their orders. But this right there on the line where this people actually physically in the military are just going to go, no, I'm not going to do it. And then it's over.
Exactly. And this will transition nicely into one of my favorite topics. But first, I want to say the other thing they're doing that you're seeing in the military is there's been a purge in the United States military with these suicided generals, and these generals all of a sudden in these scandals where they're being fired for, you know,
honey traps.
screwing interns. You're like, you're bombing women and children, schools and hospitals and mosques on the other side of the planet. But that's it. Americans have integrity and we have a line in the sand and we're going to put our foot down. You don't have sex with interns. But that's still not going to stop, which is what you're pointing out with even the Israelis. We ingrained in us all, as long as you're not a psychopath or a sociopath, is compassion and love. And I don't mean that from a cheesy point. When you look at YouTube, the highest ranked videos with the most views are the puppy videos and the dog rescue videos and the animals loving other animal videos, because it really touches that hidden, suppressed, primal compassion and love mechanism that's hidden within all of us.
Which they try to destroy with the news and alternative news, which is all fear porn, gloom and doom, and scare you. It's the pants shitter networks. And they're trying to destroy your sense of love, and they're trying to get everybody all amped up and afraid constantly and jumpy by pumping them full of fear every day.
Yeah.
All negative stories all day long.
And the desensitization mechanisms by which they use to dehumanize, quote, the other people, those other people. We are sophisticated and we are a benevolent and altruistic society. But those other primates, those other lesser, they're not even human. They're less than human people. It's okay to kill them because they're not really human. And what's happening because of the alternative.
Well, they wear funny hats and they pray to a different invisible man.
Yeah, exactly. Because of the internet, that whole facade is being torn down. It's being destroyed. And people are seeing videos of beautiful women in Iran with blue eyes like theirs, who are at ski resorts, snowboarding down mountains and going to malls and purchasing the same Victoria's Secret lingerie that they are purchasing. And they're like, what? That's what it's like in Iran?
I've met people who didn't even know Africa had giant cities. They thought they're all just Ethiopians starving with pot bellies and rice bowls, whatever. No.
Yeah. And it's really hard when you see a video of Palestinian children playing hopscotch, or you know, telling the same cute story that wins your heart over when a little boy or girl is trying to tell you some imaginary story about their favorite cartoon character and blah, blah, blah. It wins you over. And all of a sudden, like a cold water being splashed in the face of a drunk or being slapped across the face, it literally snaps you out of the hypnosis of this idea of they're not like us. And you realize, holy crap, I have more in common with that little girl or that woman on the ski resort or that guy doing wheelies on his motorcycle than I do with the parasites that run the planet. And that's why you're getting the Israeli Air Force guys standing down, refusing those orders, because
so many Israelis committing suicide after the fact the ones who did bomb kids.
Oh my God.
Themselves now.
One of my dearest friends, Adam, who escaped that because he was going to, he served in the IDF. He quit the IDF. He didn't tell them he quit. He got on a plane and came here. And actually, technically, from what he told me, they can actually capture him here and bring him back because of the agreements they have with the United States. And he was a bouncer at the local bar here, and I became friends with him. And he actually started a Facebook page, and I can't remember what it was called. It was something along the lines of no more killing until an agreement's reached. But anyway, that's exactly what happened to him. He told me that. He said he broke down. He had a nervous breakdown, and literally was in a room with a gun, and he was going to blow his brains out. But what stopped him was, he said, if I blow my brains out, this continues. If I escape and I'm able to share my message with other Israelis to let them know it's okay, you're not a traitor, you're not you're not a self-hating Jew, you're not all these things, that those instincts that you have that make you break down and want to murder yourself and break down and cry and have a nervous breakdown are completely natural, are completely acceptable, and it's okay, and that it's your real natural duty, not your duty to state, not your duty to the invisible man in the clouds or some religious ideology or some political ideology, which is Zionism, who, by the way, the Jews are the biggest victim of, that it's really your duty to stand down and to leave and to spread that message. That's what this guy is doing. And it's very telling of what's going on over there. And it's very telling of the future of what is in store for the parasites that run Israel, that they have the same problem there that the parasites here have, which are basically the same parasites. That is, you think that your minions are going to blindly, without any question, follow your orders, and they're not going to do that. And we see that reflected in the desperation that they have with militarizing the police, because they are scared. They realize that things are going the way that they had hoped. They don't have the control over the goyim and the Gentiles and the cows and the serfs that they thought they had. And they're getting desperate and they're getting scared. And they're doing things like, oh, we'll hire outside mercenaries and we'll swap them. We'll take the American troops and we'll put them in Russia, and we'll take the Russian troops and we'll put them in here and there. And I think they're going to swap. And for lots of reasons that I don't mind getting into, it's going to be a failed plan. There are 210 million registered gun owners in this country. What does that mean? That doesn't mean that there's 200 million gun owners. That means that's 210 million people who are honest enough to actually admit that they had guns. And if you know anything about guerrilla warfare and combat, there's not an army in the world that can combat that. So then they say, well, that's okay. We have the Samson option. Listen, man, we know there's a finite number of nukes on the planet. And if you know how many large cities there are in the world, there's not even enough nukes to bomb every large city in the world, let alone medium-sized city, let alone every small town. You're very good at pointing out what radiation really is. It's on the electromagnetic spectrum. It doesn't blow around the world in the wind and the Gulf Stream and everything.
It's light. It doesn't. You can have particles blow. Radioactive particles, but that's not what was going on. And
no.
I mean, just an example with all that propaganda, you know, we both know for a fact that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were bombed in Japan, and they're larger cities than ever, sitting right on top of where those bombs were.
Yes. And there's life and there's villages and there's towns in the surrounding areas that outside of that 14-mile radius have never been affected and certainly aren't affected today. Not to mention, they act like, oh, well, we do our tests in the middle of the desert and we do our tests in the middle of it. But okay. But if your theory of the particles that remain somehow get whisked up into the atmosphere and blown around, it's a farce. It's
nuclear
all a bluff.
Winter was BS, yeah.
Yes. It's all a farce. It's all BS because they're I don't even want to use the word vastly. They're astronomically, exponentially outnumbered. And they know it and they're scared. And their entire power structure is built on a house of cards. And just like the Wizard of Oz, once that curtain is completely ripped wide open, and because of the internet, that curtain has been pulled open, not completely, but you can see the guy's feet now, okay? And the world is waking up, and they understand this, and they're scared. So the only way that they think, because remember, everything they do is out of fear and hate, and they ignore basic behavior modification, right? Pavlovian theory. If you understand Pavlovian theory, there's four ways to modify behavior. Two are kind of effective, two are not so effective. One is the most effective and one is the least effective. The most effective way is positive reinforcement. The absolute least effective way, the least enduring, it doesn't last long, it's not effective, and always harbors resentment in the subject, which manifests in retaliation later on, is what they call positive punishment. And by positive, they mean the administering of a punishment. These guys are psychopaths. They are totalitarian dictators. The only thing they know is punishment, punishment, punishment. That's reflected in our foreign policy. That's reflected in our domestic policy. That's reflected in the police force. They don't incentivize good behavior. It's reflected in our school system. They don't incentivize good behavior. It's punishment, 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 punishment. And yes, out of fear, people will abide by that for a short amount of time because they're scared. But out of all of the human emotions, the whole gamut, there's nothing more taxing and more exhausting than fear. And after a while, with all these rebellions you've seen over, whether it was in the European countries against the monetary system or the Middle Eastern countries, when they interview these people and say, listen, you guys put up with this crap for so long. What was different about what finally happened that was the last straw? And they said, listen, after a while, you start to say, I don't care anymore. Do your worst. Kill me. Jail me. Put me in an internment camp. Torture me. Whatever you're going to do, do it. But get it over with because I can't stand it anymore. Which is a side note, which is why the name calling of anti-Semitic has died. They've overused it. And it's gotten to the point where people...
Yeah, they cried wolf too many times.
Yeah, the same thing with the term domestic terrorist. People used to shut the hell up really quickly because God forbid you got labeled a domestic terrorist or a anti-Semite, but they've overused the word so many times and they've overused it in such ambiguous situations where you're like, wait a minute, what the hell does that even have to do with Jews? And we won't even get into right now what a Semite really is. But other than the fact that they've overused it to the point where people, two things have happened. It's actually gotten to the point where people go, whatever, you're an idiot. And sometimes people are like, they wear it as a badge of honor. It's a good thing. Like it tells you you're on the right path and you're doing the right thing. And back to the original point, these people, they only know fear, they only know punishment. And instead of backing off and saying, okay, listen, let's regroup, let's reformulate. We've spent all of our money on social engineering and studying human behavior and societal behavior, and we have our great little plan that's working. It's working perfectly. I mean, you know, I talked to somebody who was a Zionist and their hubris was very upfront. He said, well, technically, we don't have to get this one world government and one world currency because we already own the world. We already run all the world's currencies. We already own everything. But it's the mental illness to Zionism that says, but technically, according to this book, the Talmud, we have to fulfill what's in the Talmud. That's why we have to have control of Jerusalem and we have to have Israel and we have to, you know, everything from the Euphrates to the Nile.
Israel, yeah.
Yeah. And it's Israel. Which people don't know this, but if you talk to an actual Zionist, they'll laugh at you and say, well, technically what it says in their great book isn't beyond the Euphrates to the Nile. It's wherever a Jew sets foot. It actually says that in there. Therefore, the world is theirs. And you see that in their mindset with how they behave in whatever host country they're in. And
which as has long predictable consequences.
It, exactly. That's the key.
All throughout history, acting like that has gotten their neighbors to rise up against them. There's been a delay because of the Holocaust mythos, but yes. Even that's wearing down. As that breaks down, that kind of behavior, no one's going to stand for it. The excuse for it now is 6 million, I win. But without that, as that starts to fade, the same thing, the same kind of reactions to that sort of behavior of usury and deception and everything, and ethnic nepotism and so on, that happened in the past is going to happen again.
Absolutely. And there's a reason. Because power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And megalomania is an actual, real psychological phenomenon. And what megalomania is when you have so much power that you surround yourself with yes men who tell you what you want to hear. You're so used to getting your way that you actually believe, you start to believe that you are above the species that is Homo sapien, that you are above that, whether you believe you are a god or that you're an extra division of the species, and that you're infallible and that you're unstoppable. And when that happens and megalomania sets in, you set yourself up for failure because all the little signs, the manifestations around you that point to, hey, listen, people are onto you. People are starting to get aggravated. They're starting to get pissed. You ignore it by saying, it doesn't matter. I have full control. I'm not going to do anything to squelch it. And that's the point I'm getting at. Whether it's anything they've done, 9/11, the Holocaust, a normal person would say, okay, whoa, time out. We had this plan. It's working, but we have to start addressing things in a different manner to
the Iraq war was a major screw up. It really set back warfare, hot warfare from then on. Now it's all proxy warfare, and that's fallen apart too because of Syria.
Yeah, to do damage.
When this is all over with Syria, it's going to be just as bad of a stigma as the war in Iraq, and they're not going to be able to do either method after that.
Well, yeah, and that all comes from the mythos of the Holocaust, because that's what justifies preemptive war. Oh, we think that guy over there might want to do us harm. Well, we have to go in and
he's
blow
the
them
new
up.
Hitler.
Yeah, because we didn't do that in Hitler in the 6 million. Ignoring the 55 million people of European descent that died in that war and the Soviets and everything else.
And all the Asians, yeah.
Which goes back to the point I was making about their hubris. Okay? That's what they actually call it chutzpah. Where what woke me up years and years ago, and I had the fortunate circumstance, my family life was, I was just kind of raised in an outlaw kind of mentality to always distrust authority and to know that authority are a bunch of clowns who are misfit morons that run around with under the guise that they're smarter and more integral than anyone else, but it's quite the opposite. But when I was in high school, because both my grandfathers were in World War II, and they had brothers and sisters and cousins and best friends that perished there. And okay, I learned about the 6 million and that's acceptable when you don't know. But what really, not only me, if you talk to anybody, what really sticks out in their mind that really made them go, wait a minute, blow the whistle, time out, is that 6 million is beaten in your head. And there's never a single mention of my grandfather's friends on both sides. Their sacrifice doesn't matter. Fuck, screw them. What they're sacrificing, that doesn't matter. The French is sacrificed. The Swiss is, nobody else's sacrifice matters. The gypsies don't matter. The communists don't matter. The trade unionists don't matter. The Russians, nothing else matters. The only thing that matters is this one group of people. It makes you wake up to say, wait a minute, time out. Why? Yeah, it's horrible that they were killed, but it's horrible that the Russians were killed, or the train unionists were killed, or the gypsies, or the political dissidents.
The non-Jewish Polish.
Yeah, exactly.
Or all the Ukrainians starved to death prior to Hitler even being on the stage.
Yes, but see, it's that hubris that is why throughout history, remember, they are the first ones to tell you. They brag about it. They wear it as a badge of honor that they were persecuted, executed, expelled, kicked out of slaughtered, murdered, yada, yada, out of every single country in the world. They're the first ones to tell you to brag. They brag about it. And every reasonable, rational thinking human being has the same initial reaction. The first question that pops in your head is, Why? Why? Hindus haven't, Buddhists haven't, Africans haven't, Asians haven't, South Americans haven't, Germans haven't, English haven't, French haven't, Canadians haven't. What is it about you and the way you treat your host country that literally drives people to the point where they execute, persecute, slaughter, kick, you know, put you in exile, all these horrible things? It isn't because of out of nowhere, for no reason, you did nothing.
It's and not
it
isn't the falafel and bagels.
Yes. And their favorite comeback is they always say, they're scared of our beliefs. Well, okay, you have a religion and you have beliefs. So do Hindus, so do Buddhists, so do Muslims, so do the people that were, you know, Scientologists. And yeah, there's things that are way crazier than your religion. There's people who worship the spaghetti monster in the sky. Nobody's persecuting, executing, expelling, and kicking them out. So it isn't that people are afraid of your beliefs, unless your beliefs aren't biblical. Your beliefs are something else. And then when you read the Talmud isn't it. What the Talmud really is a two-part.
It really is advocating racial supremacy.
Oh yeah. Well, it's also it spells out. It's a two-part operating agreement and business plan that unites a group of people together under a contract that explains to them all the systematic ways to take over a nation, to divide it, to conquer it, to grab the power centers of each of every society. And it spells it out. It tells you, listen, here's the power centers. You have to get control. And here's how you get around their local laws. You create bureaucratic agencies. You create these farce judicial systems that act outside their judicial system. You create unions. You create protesting. You create feminism. You create these extreme positions. You radicalize the people. You grab a hold of control of the education system and early education and higher education. You get control of all distribution, whether it's distribution of products or distribution of information. You get complete control over the media, all forms of media, and you put yourself in key positions of authority, whether it's political authority or authority in the key industrial centers of society. Because
and listen, to get control over all that, the first thing you tackle are the banks.
Yeah, well, of course. But it all stems from the banks, right? And the reason why is, listen, this is why usury was banned in Christianity and Muslim, because usury is nothing new. It's been going on for so long that these books, the New Testament and the Quran, were written 2,000 years ago. It had been going on for so long, for so many millennium before that these people, when they wrote the book 2,000 years ago, said, okay, we have to include in this book that usury is bad, it's a detriment to society, and you can no longer do it, okay? So these mechanisms by which they rule over society isn't something they devise. You know, I've heard people say, well, yeah, this is something new with them. You know, Zionism and Talmud started 200 years ago. Bullshit, okay? These principles, at least, have existed for millennia. It's the same key. It's the same playbook. They're acting out the same playbook. They've just, you know, they've made it more coherent and put it in an actual written document, which is that thing that I told you, that's a double operating agreement and business plan disguised as a religious text called the Talmud. And they've implemented it in all societies simultaneously. And the real reason why they're able to get away with it, one is, yes, they're cohesive because they're allowed to have their secret societies and act secret because they're the pure persecuted ones. And they band together because they're the chosen people. They have something in common and they've been persecuted and the whole world's out to get them. But that's not where the real power lies. The real power lies in their monopoly on the issuance of currency, because how do they get these key positions in finance, in every major industry in the world, in the media, in the bureaucracies?
Ethnic how are they nepotism.
Exactly. How are they able to come up with the money to start feminism and to start the tax-exempt organizations and all the nonsense that they do? If you want to do that, right? If you and I get together and we say, hey, listen, man, we want to start an organization that's tax-exempt, that is going to rebel against the system, and that's going to liberate human beings and create freedom. We have to start from scratch. We have to get money. We have to create businesses that have an income. We have to pay half of that to taxes. We have to get donations. I mean, we have to build money. We have to earn it. They hit a button and print it out of thin air. When they want to buy Facebook, or they want to buy YouTube, or they want to buy Motorola or whatever else, you know, whatever telecommunications monopoly that they want, They click a button and it's at their disposal and they buy it. And that's how they get power so quickly. And then they, of course, through their system, they get the real assets of the, of whatever nation they've subverted. And they can use that as collateral for even, even the times when they have to at least put on the theatrical image that they're doing everything by the book, right? So even when they have to show to the public how they traded whatever they traded for Google or whatever they bought, they have to show that they had assets to collateralize for the loan they got.
Hey, I'm doing a talk in a couple of days about Mark Rich and how he bought himself a pardon when he wasn't paying any taxes with Glencore or any of that. And just all the shenanigans he and Pincus Green did. And they just purchased a couple pardons from Clinton.
Oh, it's a revolving door. Yeah, that's always the farce, right? Like, I just saw a video from the 80s with Doug Casey, and some snide statist made the comment like, she was like, well, you're against the FDA, and this is in the 80s, and look at all the deaths from, I forget whatever drug it was at the time. And he laughed at her and said, you know that was an FDA-approved drug, right? So it's a revolving door. The same people who end up in the the government institution that's supposed to regulate the financial institutions, or the government regulatory agency that's supposed to regulate the oil companies to prevent things like the Deepwater Horizon.
Well, it's like Chris Dodd was on the ethics committee.
Yeah, exactly. They were working in the industry for which that you're supposed to regulate, and they go in, they get the payoffs. So they're jerking off the porn, and they're going off and buying their cool little toys that they've got from their kickbacks. And when they go into the competitors that they want knocked off, yeah, the regulations come down swiftly and hard. And then when they go into BP, it's, hey, Chuck, hey, Mark, how are you? How's the family? Great, good. Oh, here's your envelope. Thank you. Or no, here's the envelope I'm going to drop on the floor. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Mm-hmm. And, oh, you know what? I looked around. Everything looks A-OK here. See you later. It's a farce. The whole thing's a farce. It's just as bad as, like you said, oh, we're in charge of looking into our own wrongdoing. We have internal affairs. What the hell are you talking about?
After investigating myself, I decided I was not guilty of any wrongdoing.
Oh, that's acceptable. And that's really, the public sucks in the way that it's time for humanity to grow up and become adults. And just like you tell a child at some point, if you teach them this, listen, honey, you're 7 years old now. And I know every year we told you Santa brings you presents, but you're at the age where you need to come to terms and realize that that's just a fairy tale and it's not real. And if you don't stop telling the other kids that Santa's giving you the gifts, they're going to start laughing at you and making fun of you, and you're going to make a fool of yourself. Well, I'm here to say to the statists of society, it's time to wake up, grow up, you're an adult, and come to terms with the fact that statism is a farce. It's a fairy tale, as idiotic, juvenile, and obnoxious as believing in the tooth fairy or the parting of the Red Sea.
I'll tell you something else about cops, too. It is mythosis, but don't talk to cops and bring a camera wherever you go.
Of course.
You are allowed to film them, and no matter what they say to you, don't answer them.
Exactly, because they have full control of all the power centers of society, which is why they can get away with such obnoxious lies. They're not concerned about truth or reality or fact checking or how easily disprovable their lie is. That's why they can tell you he committed suicide. He was handcuffed in the back of the car with no gun, and he was shot two times in the back of the chest or the back of the head. How can you say that? Because the judge they own the system. They're not worried about believability. It's the same thing with shrunken heads and poop diamonds. When you look at some of the nonsense of the Holocaust, you're like, how can anyone believe this?
Babies on incubators.
Yeah.
Soap and lampshades.
Yeah, exactly.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah. The idea that the Germans, who otherwise their reputation on the planet is their engineering marvels, that they're perfectionists, and that when it comes to ingenuity.
Hold on, let's do another show on World War II. So I want to, This has been almost 2 hours and keeping it with the theme of police, but I don't mind that. Let's have a good discussion about the Holocaust and World War II and some of that propaganda and how that's led to further wars as well. Yeah, but I'm going well, to have guess... to end it here soon because I got to edit all this up. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll end it with a couple of things. One, what you derive from that is that's who's in charge, and that's why they look. The people that I know that I talk to are Zionists. They're not concerned at all with all the obvious and glaring holes in the 9/11 story. The same reason why the cops aren't worried about the fact that it's obvious that nobody can shoot themselves in the chest twice with their hands handcuffed behind their back, because it doesn't matter. That's their attitude. It doesn't matter. We're in control of investigating ourselves. And that's why people need to stand up. They need to get over their fear. And to go back, I don't want to get off track, but to go back to the original point we were making, where we walk through this idea that they are losing control. They are getting desperate, and you're seeing it in the bluffs they're putting out, you know, with their controlled opposition with the Julian Assanges and this nonsense. And they're leaking this information, and I'm doing hand gesture quotes that, oh, they leak that, oh, the NSA has bought 8 billion rounds of hollow point ammunition. What nonsense, even if it's true. When you do the math and you divide 8 billion by the number of minions they have, it comes out to some obnoxious number like 160,000 rounds per person. Like, that's even usable. Second of all, in a combat situation, you can't carry that much ammunition because it's heavy.
No, the whole purpose in that was just to generate money for the arms industry. They're not actually going to use it at all.
No, yeah, it was a two-part operation. Yeah, of course, it justifies them spending all this money, which 90% of it goes into somebody's pocket. The armament industry makes a killing, and it gets leaked to the public to scare them back into their pens so that they don't uprise. But the truth is, first of all, hollow point tells you what? It's a handgun caliber, which is only good up to 50 yards at best. I'll be liberal with my estimate. If you logically look at it, it's unreasonable. They can't use 8 billion rounds. There aren't 8 billion rounds. And you know, if it really comes down to combat, you're going to have a bunch of Americans with deer rifles shooting them at 500-600 yards. You're not worried about somebody running up to you.
I don't know. Cops will empty like 5 or 6 rounds into one kid. So.
Yeah, but at 50 feet.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's the other thing. These idiots are so incompetent. When I first moved out to LA, I used to laugh at all the news reports where it would be like, you know, these cops pulled somebody over. And you know, when a cop pulls you over, they park their car, what, 20 feet behind your car at most. And it would be the suspect got out of the car, and two cops unloaded 80 rounds between the two of them, wounding one of the two suspects. So out of 80 rounds between two officers, at 20 feet, you only wounded one of them. This is who they're going to.
They get frantic and panic and just be like, bah, 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 and they don't even aim. They have no skill. They have nothing. They can't fight. They can't shoot. They can't do anything.
So this is who they're trying to scare you into submission, saying, you better behave, or this is who we're going to send with their 80 billion rounds of hollow points to oppress you. It's all a joke. And
all these school shooters are better shots than the cops.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, they're going up against people who are real men, who really do have combat training, who are deer hunters, who do, even though they might not have been in the military, they do have the experience of going in the woods, hiding their position, visibly hiding their position through scent, and leading game with their deer rifles and shooting things at 600-800 yards away. And then we can get into the reasons why.
Well, you look at the DC sniper incident and you realize there's not a damn thing they could do. If there were 30 people even doing that in each state, it would shut the entire economy down because people would be afraid to go to the gas station. It would be complete lockdown, and there's not a fucking thing they could do about it.
At all. Dude, not even that. Look at the LA riots or even Ferguson. They've got their tanks. They have their MRADs. They have their assault rifles. They have their grenades. They have their snipers on the roofs. You know, let's forget Ferguson. Let's just even remember the LA riots. They didn't go in there and stop it. Hell no. They're not there because they're brave and honorable and they're willing to put their life in the line. They're
Once
there
there's
for
risk, they're not going to do anything. No, they're cowards.
They're fighting inner city people who might have a handgun, maybe an AK-47. They're not trained. They're not hunters. And they won't go in and do anything. They're not going to fight the American people. And then the next level is you say that and you say, well, but they have, there's the Samson option. They have the nukes. And
they're not going to nuke their own source of revenue.
Exactly. And I even take it one step further. They might, you know, they don't mind sacrificing two or three cities as symbolism, right? As a symbol to the rest of the world. See, we're willing and able to do it. So you better stand down. I don't.
That would just cause every single one of them to be hunted down and just completely annihilated.
Exactly. And the other point I like to make is, you want to talk about megalomania? I say, picture the biggest spoiled brat you've ever met in your life. You know, temper tantrum, the whole nine. Multiply that by a magnitude of a trillion. These people are so used to getting their way. They're such spoiled brats. And this is another thing that, you know, it's a house of cards. It's all a bluff. It's all a farce. You think these people are going to go into an underground bunker for the next 6 years or whatever it takes for the half-life of whatever nuclear annihilation they're trying to tell you is coming. And they're going to live down there and just stay underground and not be able to fly to their private country clubs and their private islands and eat their caviar. And the most, the biggest thing that they love more than their golf games and anything else in the world is their power to boss other people around. You think they're going to stay in those bunkers and that the generals down there protecting the number are going to tell them, sorry, sir, we can't let you leave. They mentally, physically, psychologically won't be able to do it. They're spoiled brats.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a bluff. It's a farce. It's not going to happen. It's part of their being outnumbered and bluffing to protect their house of cards. So to everyone, I tell them, don't be afraid of the military turning on you. It's not going to work. The police certainly aren't a threat. And this idea that they're going to the nuclear holocaust is coming is a fucking farce.
Nice bullshit. I don't understand why, with all the guns in the country, that none of these bankers have been shot yet. That's what baffles me.
Well, the reason is, you know, when you study, again, history shows us, right? It's funny, like when you study the French Revolution, everything, the guillotine, they made the guillotine. And the first people to get it, actually before the politicians, were the bankers. The bankers get it first, then the politicians, after the domestic police force. Doesn't necessarily get all killed or hung, but they cowardly go, screw this, I'm not a part of this, and they run. And then that little false sense of security, that little barrier that they put between them and the people is now gone, so they're able to get to the bankers and the politicians, and they're the first ones to get their heads cut off. So right now, the people are complacent. They're making their $40,000 a year. They're not really motivated to get off their ass. Some people are because they've been driven to the point where they have to because they have no alternative, or they're integral and smart and they're doing it. And the shit really hasn't hit the fan yet. But once it does, no amount of propaganda, no amount of corporate media, no amount of anything is going to stop the people from getting into Wall Street and everything else to take them out in the streets and do what they will. Now, most of those people, especially the people.
It really only takes like one or two trained people.
That's it.
That's all it would take. Just like those DC snipers. I mean, if someone was really committed to it, they could take out a lot of these people. And because the cops are inept, they couldn't do anything.
Listen, they're not these omnipotent, far-reaching, untouchable figureheads, right? You know, look at that. You know,
They go out and eat lunch and stuff. All you got to do is follow them and take them out.
Yeah, listen, you took Luke Ripofsky to the woodshed, and he's built a career on it. He tracks these people down and ends up on the streets of New York interviewing David Rockefeller. Now, if that twit can track them down and walk up to them, some guy that did five tours in Afghanistan who woke up one day and realized that's the cocksucker that gives me nightmares every single day of my life, night terrors, because I have to live with the fact that I murdered children, he's going to take him out without a second thought. And these people know it, and that's why they're getting scared and they're hedging their bets. But my point to people is, don't let it deter you from standing up and doing what's right, because they don't have the power that they like to project they have. And they know it. And you see it in their behavior. They're getting desperate. They're getting scared. And because they're psychopaths and they're zero creative, which is why every one of these things, whether, you know, is the Boston bombing or Sandy Hook or this nonsense that happened in Pennsylvania with Eric Freen, or Ferguson, or the whole is 9/11,
whatever his name was.
Yeah, Dorner.
Dorner. Yeah.
It's the same playbook with the same actors and the same. It actually gets boring, and it gets boring in a funny way for me, where I'm like, I'd almost have more respect for them if they just could be a little bit more creative and switch it up a little bit and throw in a couple like monkey wrenches where it was like they put a little twist on it. But they don't, because they can't, because they lack vision and they lack creativity. Yes, they have their think tanks with some people who do, but ultimately they're
all they know is force and punish.
Force and punishment. And part of being a psychopath is being obsessive compulsive. And part of being of having compulsions and obsessions are the compulsions manifest in being very patterned and predictable. Okay. And this is who we're dealing with. And this is why, you know, people like with Ron Paul, they're like, oh my God, how did he predict this? Or people like you, how do you know all this stuff? After a while, it doesn't.
Before, you know?
Yeah. It's the same thing. Every time there's one of these, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, I don't need to investigate and look into the details and wait for the Freedom of Information Act for the documents to show. I don't need to. It's the same freaking scam and the same con over with the same fallacies and the same mistakes. You already know it's propaganda. You already know that it's a hoax. And it's running its course. It's getting old. This is why every time they pull one of these things off, it's literally
just... That's why they stopped the terror alert crap. Remember, they used to have color-coded terror alert. They're like, we're in the orange zone. We might be in the red zone. People just quit paying attention to it after a while.
Because they really view us as cattle, as goyim and Gentiles and sheep and everything else.
And we had more people die from Black Friday than Ebola. And yet I was getting Ebola updates when I was in L.A. on my burner phone just to warn me about this epic disease.
Yeah, which, by the way, they still, when you buy these cell phones, they're called Amber Alerts. And it starts out of amber, and of course it's always something mild. But what it's there to do is to condition you, which is I was making that point earlier about the second purpose for all these government agencies and the oppression and the leaked, you know, 8 billion rounds of whatever. It's, yes, it's to squelch oppression, but it's also to condition people into a slave mentality, to condition them into believing this is your role in society. You are a slave, you are cattle, you're a goyim, you're a Gentile, and you are to do what you're told and do all these things. And part of this conditioning, because they do have think tanks that are filled with psychologists that do social studies and social experiments, and they understand human behavior and the sociology of the species and the psychology of the individual.
Yeah,
and they know what pulls their strings and their buttons. But I have to put an asterisk here for the majority of the people. But that's not who we're concerned about. We're not concerned about the sheeple, right? Because statistics exist. And if you understand statistics, you only need 18% of the people for a revolution, because the sheeple are really sheeple. They don't have a mindset. They don't draw their own conclusions, and they don't do things out of honor and integrity.
They hear opinions on TV and think they thought of them themselves.
And guess what? They only side with the winning side. As soon as the tides shift, in a heartbeat, at the drop of a hat, guess whose side they're on? They're on the side of the winning side, just like sheep, right? So I'm not concerned about those morons, because that's the true flaw in the species, right? Psychopaths are a flaw, but they're a minute flaw. They're a very small fraction of the species. The real flaw lies in the bootlickers, the state worshipers, who revel in their victimism, who revel in their servitude, who are willing to actually commit the acts of the psychopath. The Maos, the Hitlers, the Obamas, the Stalins, the Lenins, they would be in a mental institution in a straitjacket talking to the wall if it weren't for the other flaw in the species, which are the bootlickers, to listen to them, to do what they say, and to commit the actual acts of murdering children and rounding people up.
It's authoritarianism in the state in all those cases you just named. It's the state doing all the mass killing, and it could not happen without authoritarian personalities.
Oh, listen, this isn't even meant to be humorous. It's just reality. The Obamas and the Hitlers and the Lenins and the Stalins and the Maos are mouthpieces. They are puppets that are there to deliver the speeches that have been devised strategically by the think tanks of the people, of the sociologists who study the species. There will come a day where they won't even need the Obamas and the Hitlers and the Stalins. They will have a monitor. You know, like, for example, Betty Crocker actually is not a real human being. Betty Crocker, if you look, it's an artist's rendering of the perfect middle woman that they devised in the 50s that they thought represented the average home wife, right? Mm-hmm. They will have something similar to that. I doubt it'll get to that point, but in their vision, they'll have something similar to that, whereas this ambiguous figure of ambiguous in race and everything else, that'll be the monitor from like George Orwell's dictating to the sheep how to think, how to act, how to behave, what's right, what's wrong, who to vote for, and what orders they are duty-bound to fulfill, which include murdering women and children and blowing up schools and hospitals. Like, you know, when I hear in the threads on Facebook or in the videos or wherever, these people, it's one thing when the psychopath says it, but when you're parroting dialogue that attempts to justify when it's okay to murder babies, not children, babies, you've jumped the shark. You have gone, as the movie says, full retard. I mean, what point do you find yourself as a 9-to-5er on a thread arguing with somebody that it's okay to murder babies? When you find yourself in that position, it's time to end your life right then and there. It's game over. You're done. You have failed as a human being.
Yeah, I agree, man. Well, 6:26 a.m. here. That's a very interesting talk, and we'll have to talk about World War II because that's one of my favorite subjects. But till next time, I'm glad you got Skype, man. It's good stuff.
Absolutely.